What are the principles that guide FINRA's decision-making when it comes to enforcement action? That's the question that's been on the mind of FINRA's head of enforcement, Susan Schroeder, since she took on the role in mid-2017. In this episode, Susan rejoins us to discuss how getting back to the basics is helping her build a more effective enforcement team. Welcome to FINRA Unscripted. From New York, I'm your host, Caitlin Kiernan. For today's episode, I'm pleased to welcome back to the show, Susan Schroeder. Susan is FINRA's head of enforcement. Susan, thanks for joining us once again.
Thank you for having me again.
When we last spoke on episode 9, you talked us through some of the efforts you have been making to bring together two enforcement teams, and you talked a lot about how you are striving for consistency. Just wanted to refresh our listeners. How's that process going, and what are we looking to accomplish with this integration?
So we're looking to accomplish with the integration an even stronger enforcement program than we already had. I think we're extremely proud of the enforcement actions that we've brought over the years and the impact that we've had on investor protection and market integrity. But you can always do better. And one of the things we focused on as we integrated two groups that had previously been separate was making sure that we speak with one voice, that we're bringing cases that are proportionate to each other and that reflect the same principles and priorities.
And how are you doing that?
Well, we're doing a variety of things. Integrating the two teams, going through a structural reorganization, is definitely part of it. We've created some new business processes as well. But one of the most fun things we've done is just take a step back and have a dialogue within our team about decision-making, about what are the most important things to focus on when we consider a matter and consider the right outcome for a matter. Having that sort of philosophical conversation has really been a great opportunity for us to all make sure we're on the same page.
Did that dialogue lead to any formalized approach, or is it just really a conversation?
It's definitely been a conversation. I wouldn't say that there's anything formalized that we're doing differently. We certainly weren't able to come up with the magic algorithm that, you know, pointed us to the right enforcement outcome. But what we have done is talk a lot. And in fact, I gave a speech in February at a CIFMA event regarding the things we've been talking about and really the principles that guide our decision-making, decisions about, is it appropriate to bring an enforcement action given the set of circumstances that we're looking at in a case? Or, okay, here we're faced with some misconduct. What are the things we need to do? What is the best outcome here to meet our regulatory goals of remediation and prevention? So thinking through issues like that and really articulating our beliefs has been very useful.
And you're looking to do this in a transparent fashion with the speech at CIFMA. Why is it that you want firms to be able to hear and understand your thought process?
What I've learned while at FINRA was how little firms understand about the checks and balances we have in place here as an organization. We haven't done a great job within enforcement ourselves of explaining to firms all of the different things that we go through, the steps we take, the number of eyes on any case to ensure fairness of process and consistency of outcome. I think providing firms with more transparency into the way we think, as well as the things we do to create a case, is really important. People should understand what we're doing and why we're doing it.
So a case ends up on enforcement's desk. What is the first question you ask yourself when you see that case?
So the first question is the threshold question, right? Which is it appropriate to bring an enforcement action in response to the set of facts that we have in front of us? Is that the best outcome in order to achieve FINRA's mission? Sometimes there are different ways to deal with misconduct or uncertainty. Sometimes, rather than an enforcement action, a better, more instructive, and more effective outcome might be releasing some guidance on a rule that has been widely misinterpreted or misunderstood. So really thinking through, if we're going to bring an enforcement action, why? Make sure that that's the right response on FINRA's behalf.
And what would make you say, yes, this is a case you want to bring? What are you looking for that would flag that this should be a case?
We really try to be very risk-based in enforcement. So we look to cases that cause harm. So harm to investors, for example, that needs to be remediated, or harm to market integrity that needs to be fixed and prevented. And another form of harm, which is really risk. So we see many cases where no one has been harmed yet, right? Maybe that's a bit of serendipity. Maybe that's some good luck. When we see misconduct that creates significant risk of harm, we feel strongly that that is an area where we need to take action to remediate and prevent that harm from happening. We can't count on good luck forever. So looking for places where misconduct has created risk to investors, risk to the market, those are important for us.
So when you're deciding whether an enforcement action is appropriate or not, if you decide it's not appropriate, what other tools does FINRA have to address the issue of concern?
FINRA has a variety of tools in its toolbox. Things from issuing cautionary action. So, for example, saying to a firm, you did violate the rule, not in a way that was material or caused real harm or risk, but we want to put you on notice, essentially, that this should be fixed. And if it's not fixed, next time it's going to be really serious. So cautionary actions and informal actions are one tool, but there are others like guidance. Perhaps the reason that we're seeing an issue in the industry is that the rule is not well understood. If that's the case, then the right steps for FINRA to take are to release more guidance.
And sometimes you work together and bring both an enforcement action and provide guidance, right?
That's exactly right. We did that in 2017. We had a concern about a particular kind of product, volatility-linked exchange-traded products.
Say that five times fast.
We identified the fact that the firm had not been reasonably supervising sales of these products for several years. And so there were customers who had been harmed, and we wanted to get them their money back. But we also were concerned that this widespread misunderstanding about the way the product worked might have existed elsewhere other than just that one firm. So we ordered the firm to make restitution. We also released a regulatory notice describing the risks associated with that particular product and encouraging other firms to look, make sure you're supervising it right.
Okay, so once you've had this case and you've decided it should be an enforcement action because it has evidenced harm or risk of harm, whether to investors or the market, what's the next step? What do you ask then?
The next question is, well, what's the most effective sanction we can bring? Sanctions should be designed to remediate the problem and prevent or deter the problem from recurring again. So how can we best do that? For example, sometimes the best way for us to accomplish our regulatory goals is to order a significant fine, something that really shows the gravity of the misconduct and acts as a powerful deterrent for the rest of the industry. But sometimes that's not the most effective thing we can do. And a more effective thing would be to order the firm that has engaged in the misconduct to hire an independent consultant to come in and show the firm what it needs to fix, how the firm needs to change in order to get it right the next time. It really depends on the facts and circumstances. And so there can't be an automatic response when we're thinking about a sanction. We really need to think about what harm was caused, what risk was created, and how can we address that specific issue.
So this is less science, more art?
I guess you could say that. There's certainly a lot of human judgment involved. Luckily, we have a lot of tools that we use to guide our decisions in the right direction consistently.
What kind of tools do you have?
Well, for example, FINRA has its sanction guidelines, which are a set of guiding principles, essentially, for sanctions that are propounded by our National Adjudicatory Council. And they list factors that enforcement is required to consider when we're thinking about a sanction, things that might make the circumstances more aggravated or things that we should consider as mitigating when we're thinking about a sanction. That's a great example of a tool that we use every day.
What is your greatest challenge when determining what the appropriate sanction is, whether it's a fine or restitution or, like you said, ordering a consultant to come in and fix the problem?
I think the greatest challenge is that often the best solution really is facts and circumstances dependent. But at the same time, part of the deterrent value in enforcement cases is being foreseeable and consistent. As I've spoken before about, it's important that we bring foreseeable enforcement outcomes. And so we don't want to treat two firms that have engaged in similar misconduct in a disproportionate way, but we do want to make sure that the sanction we order in both cases fits the root cause of the issue. And so that's a challenge. There's a balance there between creating a sanction that is targeted at the root cause of the problem and creating an overall enforcement program with consistent and foreseeable outcomes.
Yeah, it seems like that would be a challenge because FINRA has a lot of different types of firms. You have some that are massive, have thousands and thousands of brokers, and some are two guys working from someone's garage. How does that play in when you're looking at this?
You're exactly right. And it is a big challenge. The sanction guidelines inform us that a very small firm, for example, with limited financial resources, we need to take that into account when considering a sanction, considering, for example, a fine that we might assess. But we also have to think about things like the impact of misconduct. So, for example, a very large firm probably has a much bigger footprint across the industry, and misconduct at that firm would impact far more people than a small firm. We have to consider that when we think about the proportionality of the outcome. But it's really a challenge, and one we hear about very often. What's the right way to compare large firm misconduct and small firm misconduct? There's an article in the Times a few months ago about whether or not speeding tickets should be assessed as a percentage of income rather than a flat fine. It goes to the same question that we struggle with. There's no easy answer. We just try to think through the principal considerations and the facts and circumstances of the case when we're talking about the right outcome.
And when there has been harm in a case that you're bringing, what is the number one priority you have when looking at sanctions?
Number one priority is restitution to customers every time. We really want to make sure that investors who've been harmed by misconduct in a way that results in their financial loss get their money back. There's not always quantifiable financial loss to customers. In fact, most of our cases don't involve financial loss to customers. But when that does exist, our number one priority, and this is reflected not only in the cases we bring, but even in FINRA's financial guiding principles, our number one priority is restitution.
And last year, our fine money and restitution money were actually equal.
Mm-hmm.
But some people are curious about that. They think, oh, FINRA must not be bringing as many actions because fines are down. But that doesn't seem to be the case if restitution is a real priority. What do you think about that feeling that people have on fines?
Yeah, I mean, fines are a result of whatever action we're bringing. We don't target fines. We don't have specific fine numbers in mind. Our preference really is, when possible, to get restitution rather than a fine that's payable to FINRA. You're right. Last year in 2017, fines and restitution numbers were equal. And that is not a typo, although many people have asked me that. It just worked out that way. But restitution is one of the metrics I think of as most important when we think about whether or not we're being successful in our mission.
And if the goal is to remediate action, sometimes fines aren't the solution. What other tools can you use to try to get people to change their behavior?
Sometimes fines are not the best solution. Sometimes they are. Don't get me wrong. There is a place in the regulatory landscape for significant fines. But let's take a firm, for example, that's trying to get it right. Their misconduct is not intentional, but they need help in getting it right. Let's imagine that that firm has limited resources. I could either assess $1 million fine and collect it on FINRA's behalf so that FINRA's $1 million richer, or I could order that firm to take what I know will be the same $1 million and pay an independent consultant to come in, review the way the firm is supervising its business, give the firm solid, concrete recommendations for what the firm needs to do better, and I'll order the firm to follow those recommendations. I think that latter approach can be much more effective than the former under the right circumstances.
So we've got those first two questions you ask yourself. You ask, is it appropriate to bring an enforcement action? And then you ask, what is an appropriate sanction, the most effective sanction? So what's next?
So the last question we really talk about is big picture. What else do we need to think about in order to ensure we're being fair and effective as a regulator? So even if we've identified misconduct that causes harm, and we've identified a sanction that is an appropriate response, if we're doing that in a way through an investigation that isn't thoughtful, for example, or we're bringing the case years after the investors have lost their money, we're not as effective as we otherwise could have been, as we should have been, frankly. So questions like, are our investigations balanced and timely? And do they reflect our legal analysis very clearly? Do we clearly identify why particular misconduct has violated a specific rule? We think hard about those issues to make sure that in the cases we bring and in the way we interact with the industry, we're being effective.
It seems like a big part of this is explaining the why and providing transparency to firms. Why is that so important?
I think providing transparency to firms is extremely important because I think you can only be an effective regulator if the regulated entities and individuals know what you're going to do, know what you're going to think. For example, if you were driving down the street and you had absolutely no idea what the speed limit was, well, you'd probably make an educated guess. But if a cop pulled you over and told you you've been speeding, you probably have a pretty good argument. Well, nobody told me what the speed limit was. There was no posting, right? I had no idea how to model my conduct because I didn't know the rule. That's why it's important that we have speed limits posted. We need to make sure people clearly see the lines and clearly understand that my regulator has interpreted the rule in this way. And if I violate the rule, I risk the following consequences.
And this seems like a really hard question to answer. So what does success look like for your team when you're looking at this third and final part?
Looking at whether or not we're fair and effective, success to me means timely actions. It means making sure we address particularly customer harm as quickly as we can, making sure we understand the root cause of an issue and ensure that that root cause has been addressed. So not just addressing the symptoms, but addressing the disease, so to speak, at a firm. I think those are success. Taking steps that make the market safer tomorrow than it was today by fixing problems and returning people to where they would have been but for misconduct.
Can you provide an example for us that kind of highlights when all of these pieces really fall into place and you feel like the enforcement action that comes out of it hits all of these boxes?
I think a great example of an effective enforcement action was a case we brought last year involving short-term trading in unit investment trusts. We identified pretty early on that the firm at issue had not supervised the trading of those products in a way that was reasonable. The steps we took next were to make it really clear to the firm, listen, the thing we care about first and foremost is restitution to the customers whose trading was not supervised in a way that made sense. And we worked closely with the firm to identify those customers and identify how restitution should be calculated and paid. The firm actually provided us with substantial cooperation and gave us a lot of information, including engaging an outside consultant to do a lot of statistical analysis. The firm did its own internal investigation. And so when we looked at the big picture, we said, okay, we're getting restitution to customers in the following amount, and we're getting it to them fast. Part of the reason we can get it to them fast is that we did get this cooperation from the firm. So while we think that this misconduct was clearly harmful and requires a monetary sanction, we're also going to consider the firm's cooperation when we assess a fine. And we gave the firm formal credit for cooperation and a reduced fine as a result.
And do you think the document that came out of this makes that very clear to firms why this action was brought and why the restitution was ordered the way it was? And was there a fine? Does it make that clear?
I hope so. Yeah, there was a fine. And there is a section in our AWCs, our settlement documents, called Other Factors Considered. And that is where we typically will describe, and we try to describe with detail, the steps that a firm has taken in order to get credit for extraordinary cooperation. So if we have formally reduced a fine because of the firm's helpfulness during our investigation, that'll be reflected in that section of the document.
Susan, thanks again for joining us. This was a great conversation. Really enjoyed hearing more about these guiding principles you've been working on, and it's always a pleasure. That's it for today's episode. If you have any questions for future guests or ideas for future episodes, let us know. You can email us at finraunscripted@finra.org or reach out to us on social media. I'm Caitlin Kiernan from New York. Until next time.
Please note, FINRA podcasts are the sole property of FINRA, and the information provided is for informational and educational purposes only. The content of the podcast does not constitute any FINRA rule or amendment or interpretation to such rules. Compliance with any recommended conduct presented does not mean that a firm or person has complied with the full extent of their obligations under FINRA rules, the rules of any other SRO, or securities laws. This podcast is provided as is. FINRA and its affiliates are not responsible for any human or mechanical errors or omissions. Parties may not reproduce these podcasts in any form or reference them in any publication without the express written consent of FINRA.